You know, there are probably few things that strike fear and guilt into the hearts of Christians quicker than hearing a pastor stand up on a Sunday morning and say this word, evangelism. Now, do you agree? I hear some laughing out there, so I think I've hit a chord. Evangelism. In fact, take a second and just think about that word. When you think about that word or any variation of it, what comes to your mind? You might begin to think about telling others about Jesus. You know, evangelism is a nice church word. It's not necessarily one you use in your workplace every day. But it just simply means to bring good news. But we have other churchy ways that we use to also express and describe this. We'll use words like witnessing, or sharing the faith, or proselytizing even, which is a terrible word, but anyway, we use it. And if you're a follower of Jesus and you hear any of those words, it's very likely that your first reaction is this: great, here is another sermon to make me feel guilty. Right? I mean, if you were here last week, you're thinking, all right, Brent, last week you spoke on money and living generously, and I was able to hold off feeling guilty on that one. You almost got me, but I didn't let you. And here today, you're going to talk about evangelism. I don't know that I can hold up 2 weeks in a row. And you're thinking in your mind, here he goes. He's going to stand up there and he's going to ask me these questions. So, how many people have you evangelized lately? How many people have you told about Christ? How many people have you witnessed to this week? Doesn't our mind typically go there when we think about evangelism? We think about the guilt because we haven't shared. We think about the pressure because we know somebody keeps telling us all the time we're supposed to share. But let's don't jump to that extreme just yet. Stay with me. And I want to just say this too. Maybe you're here today and you're not following Jesus at all. Maybe you're here because you're curious, or a friend invited you, or something has happened in your life to cause you to be in a place where you think, I just want to seek God, and so you're searching. And so if that describes you, I just want you to know that we're glad that you're here today, because I know that even you have these crazy thoughts when you think about the word evangelism. In fact, if we're all honest, when we think about evangelism, most of our thoughts immediately go negative, don't they? Negative. So regardless of where you are or who you are or where you are on your faith journey, the chances are that when we think about evangelism, we don't think good things because it has such a negative connotation. Thoughts of guilt and shame for the Christians, and thoughts of slick, manipulative, high-pressure, uncaring, obnoxious, door-to-door salesman-type Christians for the rest. It's not a positive image, is it? And the problem with most Christians is that when it comes to evangelism, we do feel those feelings. We feel that guilt. We feel that pressure. Pastors like me tell you things and you go, okay, fine. And so we find ways to share our faith just to placate our emotions. So we'll do things like we'll stick a Jesus fish on our car and we'll think, all right, people will then know I am a Christian. But that fish out, I do have to admit, I use that as an example a lot. Ryan, would you go walk the parking lot and see exactly who I'm offending by saying that multiple times? But we do things like that. Or we do this. We find an easy way, like we'll give out a tract. You guys know what those are? T-R-A-C-T-S. Tracts, gospel tracts. And we'll leave them places. And I'm no stranger to those either. And we do those things sometimes, not everyone, but a lot of times. We do it to meet that Christian requirement. When I was in college, I may have shared this before, I had a scholarship. I went to a Christian school, and there was an endowed scholarship that was given. It was called the 12. Doesn't that sound exclusive? It was given to 12 individuals, and you got $1,200 a semester, and the only stipulation was that you go hand out 100 gospel tracts in the semester. Autumn loves that, I know. Why did I do it? To meet the requirement. Why did I do it? Because I wanted the money. I was a poor college student. $1,200 was a lot of money. I wanted the scholarship. So we find that we do those things, not necessarily that someone would find Christ. Now, yeah, we hope they do. But we do it so that we won't feel guilty. So that the guilt we have goes away and we can say, okay, whew, I've met that requirement. I can check that box off the be a good Christian list. But at our core, and you don't have to shake your heads or even say amen to this, but at our core, I think there are many of us that really hate the thought of evangelism. We hate it. And when we feel this way, our attempts are done poorly. We do them in a cold and uncaring way. And we begin to look at people not as people, not as relationships, but we begin to look at people as our project. And if I can just give you this, or if I can just tell you, you need to trust in Jesus, then I'm done. And that's what I've done to satisfy my project. And then we think, maybe now that pastor will get off my back. But what we've done is done nothing but check that box. But what we've not done is tell people about the amazing, great Jesus that we serve. Now, I will tell you, I don't think these feelings that we have are without merit, or are there, and they're not unfounded. I mean, you guys know just from the accent, I grew up in the South. I sat under the evangelists and the preachers, and I don't know if that happened in the Midwest, but I mean, we had revivals in the South at least twice a year where you would meet Monday through Friday, and it would be in the evenings, and you would get there, and that preacher would preach hellfire and brimstone. And let me just tell you, if you didn't feel guilty before you went to that meeting, you certainly felt guilty after that meeting, because they would paint pictures like this for you. Now get ready, because you're going to feel guilty after I say this. But here's what they would say. Do you want the blood of your family and friends on your hands? When you get to heaven and you're standing in the line that's going to let you into heaven, and you see that line over on the other side, and it's a line straight to hell, and your friends look at you, you like that? And they say to you, why didn't you tell me? You don't want the blood of your family and your friends on your hell, on your hands. You don't want to see them in that other line. See, amen. You don't want your friends to look at you and say, why didn't you tell me? And you look at them and go, I did, I left you a track. When you sit under that preaching growing up, there are some guilt feelings that can come from that. I know, I've sat under that preaching. But is a preacher saying things like this the most effective way to encourage us to share with others what Christ has done in our lives? I don't think so. So when we think about evangelism, there's a lot of baggage that comes with that word. But I want you to know, and don't let this scare you off for the month of November at Ashworth Road, but over the next several weeks, we're going to actually take a look at this word. What I think it's time for us to do is to rethink, to reimagine evangelism, to find a new and different way to think about it, maybe not the way we have before, but maybe the way that Christ actually intended it to be. Rethinking evangelism. Because what we know, what we have experienced in Christ, that is truly something worth talking about. But if we hope to do this, we have to start by addressing those things that hold us back. What holds us back? What keeps us from talking about Christ and our faith at all? What are those things? We're going to look at a few of these. But as we look at them, I hope that you will see not just what holds us back, but maybe something that we can present that can overcome what is holding us back. Watch the theme of relationship and how it can change what's holding us back. I think the first thing that holds us back is strictly this: fear. Fear. And there's all kinds of fear. We're afraid to do it. We're afraid to share. Maybe because we're afraid of what people will think of us. We think, if I tell them that I'm a Christian, if I talk to them about faith, you know what? They're going to think I'm a weirdo. Can I put your mind at ease? You are a weirdo. In fact, turn to your neighbor right now and look at them and say, you're a weirdo. Thank you. Do you know how I can say that? Because we all have our stuff, don't we? Have you ever been in a conversation with someone and you're talking about someone else, not in a negative way, but you've made this statement: they're just quirky. You ever said that before? They're just quirky. You're quirky. All God's children are quirky. We can't help it. We're all weird. And so we're afraid of what people will think of us. We're afraid they'll think that we're a weirdo. Now let's think about this. If I go up to a complete stranger and I just say, "Hey, how are you? Do you know Jesus?" What are they going to think? Weirdo. But if I go up to someone who I've developed a friendship with, who I meet every other week for coffee or lunch or something, and in the course of that conversation, I say, "You know, have you ever thought about spiritual things? Do you ever worry about, you know, how where peace is? Are you ever unpeaceful? Do you ever look for joy and just think it's elusive and can't find it?" Does that person think you're a weirdo? No. That person loves you. Well, let me correct that. That person thinks you're a weirdo. They don't just think you're a weirdo. They know you're a weirdo, but they choose to love you anyway. That's the difference. Everybody's got their stuff. Everybody does. But in the context of relationship, it all changes. It becomes very different. Another fear that we have is that we're afraid of this. I don't want to offend anybody. We live in a very intolerant society. The intolerance of the tolerant and all this stuff, you know, we can't say what we're afraid we're going to offend. But yeah, if we go up to someone that's a complete stranger and we say questions to them like this, "If you were to die tonight and you were to stand before God and he were to say to you, 'Why should I let you into my heaven?' what would you say?" For those of you that don't know, that's a question from an old evangelism program from the 90s, 80s and 90s. Would that be offensive to someone? Probably. Who are you? You don't know me. You don't care enough about me to get to know me, and all you want to do is to tell you, if I were to die before God, why he would let me in. That's what you wanted me to tell you? Sure, that can be offensive. In fact, a few weeks ago, one of our Ashworth Road folks shared with me that on their job, they were meeting with a couple. They had an appointment that took several minutes, and they had a good conversation. They just talked about life in general. And right as this couple was about to leave, the man turned around and said to this guy, he said, "Here, I'd like to give you this." He handed him a tract about how to get to heaven. The guy he gave it to was a Christian. He took it. But you know what he told me? He said, "I was offended. I'm a Christian and I was offended." He didn't take the time to ask me, "Do I know Jesus?" He didn't take the time to get to know me. "Are you struggling with anything? What do you care about? What's your life like?" All he wanted to do was hand me a piece of paper to check that box that he had done his duty. He was offended. They had the time to talk, and instead of finding a natural way to maybe bring Jesus into the conversation or even taking the time to get to know him, he just shoves a piece of paper in his face. But imagine how different that conversation could have been had they taken the time to develop a relationship. Had they had a chance to meet over lunch or over coffee to just get to know each other's lives and families. It's amazing what a relationship can do for removing offenses. Sometimes we can offend, but if our main concern is, "Can I check the box that I shared Christ today?" I think we're going to find that we will offend more often than if we say, "How can I get to know that person? How can I spend time with them? How can I show them I care?" I think another fear that we have is the fear of not knowing all the answers. Because God forbid someone ask us a question we don't have the answer to. We live in the Google age where we're supposed to have the answer always, all the time. But again, if you're with someone you know, do they really care when you look at them and you say, "I don't know. I'll find out. I don't know"? That's a great question. We don't have to have all the answers. What we have to know is Jesus, who he is, and what he's done for you and for me. I think you'll find that that's plenty. And I think one of the last fears we have is this, or excuse me, not the last one, a couple more. Fear of being preachy. But doesn't most of the world have this idea already? I still remember going to the Des Moines Farmers Market and seeing the guy on an actual soapbox speaking at the top of his lungs. Shake your head yes if you've seen that. Yes. So when the world thinks of evangelism, don't they already think preachy? Yes. Don't they already think uncaring? Yes. And what better way for us to dispel that, to get rid of that preachy image, than by us, quote, preaching in the context of a relationship, preaching to them, not yelling from a soapbox messages of judgment and condemnation, but speaking to them, telling them the message of grace, a message of hope, a message of healing, a message of restoration. What better to get rid of that image than for somebody to actually care? And I think one final fear we have is just simply this. This fear that says, but what if I do it wrong? What if I do it wrong? Don't I just get one shot? What if I screw it up? What if I say something that just turns them from God forever? Well, first, we need to kind of get over this self-image that we have, that we're that important, that the whole plan of God rests entirely on us. Okay, let's get rid of that. Okay? Because that's really not how it is. There's a book out there called Slow Evangelism by a guy named Michael Frost, and he writes this. He says, quote, part of the problem with evangelism is many Christians feel the need to get the whole gospel out in one conversation. The reason for this is many Christians are only ever in a position to evangelize strangers because all their friends are Christians. Evangelizing friends and neighbors gradually, relationally, over an extended period of time means that the breadth and the beauty of the gospel can be expressed slowly without the urgency of that one-off pitch. Wow, isn't that amazing to think about? Isn't it amazing to think about the difference our evangelism can be, how different it can be when we bring in the context of a relationship? It changes it completely. As Amy read our passage today, it highlights, I think, something for us, something that's very important when we think about evangelism. Paul lays out for us a progression in how evangelism will truly work. And it begins by understanding the goal. What is the goal of evangelism? What is the goal of telling people about Jesus? Can I tell you, the goal is not heaven? The goal is not to get people to heaven. Catch that. How many times have we thought that? If I scare them enough, I can get them to heaven. No, the gospel is not about heaven. We're also not looking to build an organization. That's that word, proselytizing. Let me tell you enough about Jesus to get you into my organization, because God knows we'd love to have more tithing units in this church so we can go build bigger buildings and do bigger things. No, that's not the goal. What is the goal? The goal is Jesus. Period. The goal is Jesus, so that those who don't know him yet can hear about who he is and see what a difference he can make in a life. The goal is Jesus. So how do we reach that goal? How do we get people to Jesus? Well, Paul lays it out like this. He says the end result is Jesus, but before they get to Jesus, they need to call on him. There's power in the words of someone who cries out to Jesus. That's an important thing. Now, I don't think there's a magic word. There's certainly not a magic prayer, and this may offend some people, but I hate the sinner's prayer. I hate it. Repeat after me. No, you don't have to repeat after anybody. Cry out to God. Cry out from your heart and say, I recognize, I need you, God, and bam, you're saved. That's it. There's no magic formula for praying a prayer to find Jesus, but we do need to call on his name. So we're going for Jesus, and that happens at the end, but they call before that. But then before that, what happens? Paul says there has to be belief. There has to be an inward change. You see, because actually it's not the calling on Jesus that saves you. That's already really taken place. Calling is the outward expression of what already taken place on the inside, the belief that you have in Jesus Christ, that God sent him, he died on the cross, and that he's been raised from the dead. We have that belief. So they believe, and they call, and there's Jesus. But what happens before that? How do they believe? Paul says it's by hearing. By hearing. They need to hear about Jesus so that they can believe and call and have Jesus. They need to hear. And the only way they can hear is if someone tells them. And someone typically will only tell somebody something if they've been sent to tell them. Now, sometimes right here, we bring in an assumption. We go back to the beginning of that progression where it says sent and tell. And we say, oh, sent. Woo! I'm off the hook. Because sending is what we do to missionaries. We send people to Africa. We send people to South Dakota. So, oh, I'm not a missionary. So Paul is obviously not talking to me. Not so fast. Paul's writings here are not a transcript from the first missionary conference in Jerusalem in the first century. They're not notes taken or transcribed from the pastor's convention 1 AD or 33 AD in Jerusalem. What we find are Paul's writings here in Romans to a church. A church in Rome, a letter that was meant to be circulated to other people, but a letter to a church just like Ashworth Road, made up of people, not a church full of missionaries, a church full of regular, average, everyday, ordinary people, just like the people at Ashworth Road. We can't look and say Paul's not talking to us because none of us can get around the words that Jesus said in Matthew 28. Go. He didn't say a few of you go. He said all of you go. Go. So we've all been sent. I'm sent. You are sent to your job, to your neighborhood, to your school, to your life, to your child's sports team. And so what we have to do is say being sent is not the issue. What is the issue? The telling. That's the issue. The telling. When we think of telling, we automatically move our minds to some prepackaged presentation, a memorized sales pitch. Instead, can we show the world what the death and resurrection of a first century Jewish Messiah has to do with 21st century people? That's the question. The problem is not the message. The problem is, are we communicating the message? Are we telling? And then how are we telling? You know, the message of Jesus, born of a virgin in very humble conditions, growing up with the skill of a carpenter, healing the sick, forgiving sin, touching people physically, caring for them, offering his life to the world, and rising from the dead. Do you know what that is? That's a compelling message. That's a very compelling message. You know why? Because it's good news. It's not just good news for people in the church. It's not just good news for you here today. It's good news for the world. I think we forget that sometimes. It's good news. You know what salvation is? You know what this gospel message is? It's an unending feast to fill the hearts and souls of an always hungry and never satisfied world. But far too often we don't envision it that way. Far too often we see that as the opposite of what it actually is. We see it as bondage instead of freedom. We see it as sin management instead of grace and mercy. We see it as keeping us from living when it's really life. And because we have a distorted view of the gospel, I wonder, do we really think it's a message worth sharing? You see, we create systems and methods and programs of evangelism instead of just sharing what it actually is. Now, why do I think that we view the gospel wrongly? Why do I think that we don't see that it's worth sharing? I think it's just our reluctance to share. And you think about it, we're not a culture that's reluctant to share anything. Don't believe me? Get a Facebook account. You've seen it. I hope none of you have done it. I hope you have better sense than that. But you hopefully have. You've seen family and friends, and you've read that post, and you go, oh, too much. Too much. We're not a culture that's reluctant to share anything. We like to share. We love to share good experiences. I have an account on Yelp and on TripAdvisor. When I go to a good restaurant, you know what I do? I pull out my phone on the way home and I will start typing it up. This was a great experience. I think everybody should eat there. You want to know what I like to eat? Go to my Yelp account and it'll tell you. I love to share good things. I love to share things like that. But I find today's message about sharing Christ very convicting to me. And so as we talk about evangelism, I don't want you to sit here and think I'm preaching only to you. I'm very ready to post about a place I've eaten. But even I have reluctance to share how Jesus has changed my life. And even as I wrote this sermon out this week, I thought, I wonder, do I really believe that it's as good as I tell you that it is every week? I think I do. And why do I struggle to share it? Why are we all in that same boat? Our message is compelling. It's life-changing even. I just wonder if we can rethink our view of evangelism enough to find better, more relational ways to tell it. You know, today I don't think I've answered every question that we might have on evangelism. In fact, I hope I haven't, because we're going to be here over the next several weeks. And I hope each week is another step in this process of redefining evangelism. So stay with us, come back each week, and let's build on this every Sunday in November. But I do today, I want you to know that we may not have always been doing evangelism the most effective way. We've let fear paralyze us from doing anything. But as I heard a pastor say this week, the right response to the wrong way is not to say nothing, but to do it the right way. And that's what I hope we get to. I look at the church today and I consider the state of Christianity, and part of me really believes that the pendulum has swung too far. I grew up in the era with programs and the four spiritual laws and evangelism explosion and the bridge testimony thing, and so I've been there. And that's what evangelism was when I was growing up, and even when I was in college. But that's really not what defines evangelism today. I think the pendulum has swung the other way. And we realize that evangelism without love is wrong, and so we began to see that if we could show people love and care, they might be open and receptive to our message. So what we did is we left the message over there and we turned our attention to social justice causes. We began to feed the poor. We began to care for the widow and the orphan. We went to the far reaches of the world to dig wells and build latrines. In our own neighborhoods, we began to work with kids that needed help and help refugees with English and help with job skills and job placement. But the reason I say I think the pendulum has swung too far is because I think that somewhere along the way we dropped the message altogether. We started doing good things, but we stopped telling people why we were doing it. We stopped telling them what our motivation was, and that was the love of Christ. There's a quote that's often used. In fact, I think I've used it before. Preachers love it because it makes a great sermon. And you've probably heard it. Augustine said this: preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. Can I tell you, there are a couple things wrong with this statement. First off, he never said it. None of his disciples, early biographers, anything like that, ever have those words coming from his mouth. The closest thing we find was this quote that he said, quote, "No brother should preach contrary to the form and regulations of the Holy Church, nor unless he has been permitted by his minister. All the friars should preach by their deeds," end quote. Essentially what he was saying was, make sure your deeds match your words. But today, social justice is the end thing, sharing Christ not so much. Andy Crouch, in his book Playing God, says this. He says, quote, "These days I do not often meet Christians so passionate about evangelism that they question the need for doing justice. I'm more likely to meet Christians so passionate about justice that they question the need for evangelism. In short, working for justice is cool. Proclaiming the gospel is not." But we can't miss the point. We cannot tell the gospel without words. And that's what Paul is reminding us here in Romans. Yeah, I want us to be involved in as many social justice causes as we can be. I want us to care for the needs of others. But what have we done if all we've done is given them food to eat and to fill their stomachs without telling them about Jesus, who is the bread of life? What have we done if we've given people clean drinking water, but we've not shared with them the living water of Jesus? You see, I think we have to redefine evangelism. I want us to bring the pendulum not over here to that one side, the goofy, crazy side where it used to be, but we can't leave it where it is either, to either extreme. I want us to bring it back to the middle where we can care for others and love others and also tell them the good news of Jesus. You see, ultimately, what I want you to realize over the next several weeks is that evangelism is not something that we're called to do. It's something that we're called to be, telling and doing together, to show the world the why of the gospel, that story of Jesus. It's just so good to move beyond the fear of relationship, move beyond fear to relationships, where there can be a natural sharing of something worth talking about. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do this week. Very simple assignment. I want to ask you, would you pray? I'm not asking you to write down three names of people that you know that need Jesus. Nope. All I'm asking you to do is to talk to God about telling. Would you talk to Him about your fears? Would you share with Him maybe the things that are holding you back? And then, just praying, you and God, maybe you and your spouse, maybe you and a disciple partner or whoever you've got in your life, praying together that God would begin to open your eyes to the opportunities, those God moments in your life, so that you can find natural ways to share with others the story of Jesus, His love for the world, and just how much He means to you. That's the objective. Would you pray? You see, I'm convinced that as a church, we do great things. I think we do some really good things in our community. But I don't ever want us to do good things and miss the telling part that's so critical. Because when we go, as we go, and when we tell, they will hear, and they will believe, and then they'll call. We're not responsible for the results. We leave that up to God. But we have been sent, and we have a responsibility to tell.